Welcome to Follow the Medical Record, where healthcare experts give insights into the increasing importance of following a patient's medical record through the health ecosystem with compliance, privacy, security, and efficiency front and center. This podcast is brought to you by MRO and hosted by Don Hardwick, Senior Vice President of Client Relations at MRO. Don has been in the health information management industry for over 40 years and has extensive knowledge of how medical records make their way through the healthcare ecosystem. At MRO, Don is responsible for strategic client engagement programs and overall client satisfaction. To hear from all of MRO's industry experts, be sure to visit mrocorp.com for additional content and to sign up for our monthly e-newsletter. Over to you, Don.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. I'm your host, Don Hardwick, and I'm excited to have Rita Bowen back on the show today. Rita is a resident expert with MRO in legislative issues. So welcome, Rita.
Thanks, Don.
If you could give our listeners, I know you've been on the show before, but a little bit of your background, Rita, would help, solidify some of your experience and your expertise.
Surely. I have been in health information since 1976, so I'm a long hauler, as the term is today. But I focused into privacy and security into those rules when HIPAA was released. And so I've actually focused to that for the last 25 years, specifically to all the legislations regarding patient access and any form of release of information. But I focus now to the legislative components as well, to new rules, follow closely with our national association, both AHIMA and AHEOS, which is the outsourcing vendors for release of information, and I serve as their legislative chair.
Great. Thanks, Rita. Today, we're going to talk about patient right to accessing their information, their medical record information. It's a big subject right now, because there is a push not only to have more open access where patients have the right to get that information, and they certainly should, and protecting their privacy. So it's a little bit of a push-pull here on that information. In addition, there's some additional legislative issues that have come out. Info blocking is one of them, the Cures Act, and how all of this relates. And just to clear up for our listeners, can you help define the differences in these for us?
Surely. For interoperability is basically the rule to assure that as we continue on our path of building electronic health information for patients, that that information flows appropriately to the next level of care or as directed by the patient, where they would like it to flow to. Information blocking refers to the fact that as we're on the beginning stages of interoperability, if you're using a certified electronic health record system, such as an Epic or a Cerner or anything that's been certified, there are core data elements that already have been designed to flow. And if it's a certified system, that should already be flowing to your patient portal or to some other way that the patient could actually download that information. So that's what they refer to as information blocking. There's a lot of confusion, especially what I see mostly coming from third parties or fourth parties, when they'll say, I'm wanting access as if the patient's directing this access, and you shouldn't charge me anything for this, but they're wanting access to the full record. The full record is not actually available through the patient portal where the patient could actually download the entire record at this time. Now, that is the long-term goal, but that will be every facility's will have to determine what is considered to be within their electronic designated record set. So a designated record set, as we know, is everything that's used to make a decision about the patient's health care or make a decision about the payment of that claim. So a lot of things fall into what is in a designated record set. So we have to determine over time what's going to be in the electronic designated record set that should be available and pushed to the patient upon demand. are available upon their access to a portal or some other direct access.
Rita, haven't we always, or in healthcare in general, haven't we always attempted and really provided whatever information that the patient wanted? Is this more of a content of what's not being disclosed to the patient at all, or just what's not being disclosed through a patient portal at this point?
At this point, you know, there's nothing that says you have to have a patient portal, but at this point, that's where most are focusing, is to what's available in their portal. Most facilities will have a message for the patient. If you're looking for something on the portal that, and it's not there, here's who you contact. And they may have the ability to push additional information to the portal upon demand. And if they can't, that's where the exceptions come into play. So they may have to have a discussion with the patient. I know you would like this to the portal so you can download it, but we don't have the capability of pushing that information there. So let's discuss form and format and content and manner and come to an agreement. That's that whole process of documenting the exceptions that facilities have to do under interoperability. Now, release of information, you know, we're working off of an authorization. So if the patient has authorized for someone to receive, you know, their full record, they're going to get their full record because we can provide that in a PDF or a CD or whatever form that they're asking for it. But if it's a direct access, that has to come directly out of their electronic health record. And most ROI vendors don't have the authority to say who has direct access and who does not to their system. That is decided by the healthcare facility.
Just for clarity, though, for our listeners, patients have always had the ability to get access in some format, whether it's
I have never known a patient that if they come and ask for their health record that they've been denied. I think where the issue comes in is that often patients don't know what to ask for. And they may be asking on behalf of an attorney who's asking for something specific, and they don't quite know how to request that information specifically. I'll give you an example of somebody that I worked with that was very frustrated, and she was wanting a risk management report. And I had to explain to this individual, the risk management report's never going to be in your medical record. It's not going to be in your health record. That's maintained separately. There may be evidence that there was a fall, but the full report that risk management has is not usually in your chart, nor is it even considered a part of your designated record set. So having conversations, not trying to discourage a patient, but finding out what their need is very important. So that's part of that whole service standpoint, patient service that you're providing, and when you're providing release of information, it's making sure you meet their need.
So where the OCR, Office of Civil Rights, monitors the behavior of facilities in relationship to these rules and regulations, and they're especially focused right now on patients' right to get that information. So where are the penalties that I hear that are being levied against providers? Why are those penalties occurring, and under what circumstances are they occurring? Because the hospitals and providers are seemingly trying to get that information provided to those patients and whoever their designated recipients are, i.e. an attorney's office or an insurance company for underwriting. So where's the stumbling block in there?
It's a good question, Don. And that's one thing at MRO we do is every time there is a patient access claim that has been posted by the OCR, we take that to our compliance committee, which we call our data protection committee, but that's basically our compliance committee. And I would advise all of our listeners to make that part of their habit of taking these cases as they're released and take them to your compliance committee or to whatever committee you would like and dissect them. And when I say dissect them, it's really pulling the thread to say, if this were to have happened at our facility, would we have had similar results or would we have been able to avoid this issue? And we've done that on the 19 cases that have happened since 2019. You know, it's been an evolution. I think in 2019, they said, we're going to start really focusing. And so later in the year, they did focus. And at that first one in 2019, it really came because the patient was looking for fetal monitor strips. And the fetal monitor strips are not usually part of the health record. So they asked for the information. They got everything but the fetal monitor strips. Again, they asked for it again. They got the same information, but not the fetal monitor strips. The fetal monitor strips are part of the designated record set, and they should have been made available. So again, that goes back to that core definition of making sure that the folks that are responding to these requests are educated from a standpoint of knowledge base of knowing where the sources of information are and where they have to retrieve them from. As 2020, we saw 11 cases, and in 2021, 6 cases. And as we've dissected, we see some patterns here. Two patterns specifically that I have seen come from the standpoint of substance abuse. And when it's a substance abuse, you know, we've always been very guarded, you know, because we know that that has a different protection right. But you got to remember, these are patients. They know they have a substance abuse. So those protections that are there for a third party or fourth party to be not getting that information would not apply to the patient if they're asking for their own information. The other thing that I've seen is the fact that patient representatives are not always recognized appropriately. So there might be an adult, an individual, but they may be incapacitated in some reason, or they have designated the parent as the medical power of attorney. If you've got medical power of attorney, you have access to stand in the shoes of that patient, and they should be given that information. So I think bottom line, as you're looking at those, what you would see, and if you look at some of the larger cases that have happened even in this year, where the fines were larger, it's because the information might have been centralized in one portion of the healthcare organization or the enterprise, but maybe in some of the outlying areas, such as a clinic or a practice, they don't have the expertise to do this. So my recommendation would be to centralize your release of information for your healthcare enterprise so that you could have access to the rules, have access to folks that know how to apply those rules to avoid situations of compliance and complaints with from patients, because you just don't want that. That's a patient service issue as well.
Read on these 19 cases that you mentioned. It sounds like more that it's an inadvertent omission of a piece of content of the record rather than a blatant disregard for what's being asked for. Is that a fair assumption?
I think so, Don. I think that's kind of how I would read most of these. I think that as you look at the cases, and you'll see a variance in, you know, what one facility was fined versus what another facility was fined. And that's going to happen based off of the amount of complaint and over time if the complaint is repeated. So in other words, they're giving you an opportunity to self-correct. They're giving you a corrective action plan. And if you don't self-correct and they see that complaint happening again, then the fines might be higher. But most of the time, it's been an inadvertent issue because of lack of understanding. I don't think anyone from anything I've read actually tried to block a patient from getting their information.
Well, my next question was going to be is would there be a reason that a facility would not want to provide access?
Not in my opinion. Now I can see that they may have issues, maybe a system is down, and even with interoperability, where they have to have electronic access, there is an exception if the system is down. You can have, you know, you have to say, I've got this problem, we have this, it's going to be 10 days. Will this form and format work that we can provide this information to you in that time frame? So I don't think that there's any reason that someone would not want to provide information, even if it was a situation and the facility was being sued for malpractice. It's going to show up in court. So, you know, you want to provide the patient with the information in a truthful way so they know what has happened and what has not happened.
Rita, with all the rules and regulations, it's certainly difficult to keep up for a facility with all of these and still maintain the quality of output and the amount of output, because a hospital, for instance, gets lots of requests for records and for information, rightfully so. You've got attorneys, you've got accident cases, you've got follow-up care that needs to be addressed. With that, you mentioned centralization of this process and being able to track this. Are there other ways that a facility can better prevent these inadvertent omissions of data, in your opinion?
Now, in my opinion, the best defense would be centralizing the release information across your enterprise. And you really need to look at that. I mean, if you look at your information now, you may have radiology releasing information, you know, and they probably do release, you know, their films, but these rights and these rules apply to them as well. I don't see information being released out of the lab as often, but it could happen. And you just want to centralize in every form throughout your organization, especially if you're an enterprise, because I'll just use my local facility here where I go. It's called Erlanger Health System. Well, if I go to the hospital and then I go to a practice that's owned by that hospital, I expect the records to merge. And if I'm asking for information, I expect both sets of information to be released. I don't expect them to be released separately because they're both under the same title. So I think it's something that each organization needs to look at how they are organized. And then they need to centralize and really look at their policy and procedures that may need to be revised accordingly. And then train people accordingly as well. Even train people that may not be in that centralized release of information component, but they need to have training materials or scripts for people that might work in a practice or a clinic that they may receive, the patient may be asking. They need to know how to direct the patient quickly to the appropriate location to get that information. So that would be my suggestion.
Rita, in sort of closing here, are there any other pieces of advice? You've been a director of health information management in your career. If you were talking to one of your, individual professionals that you deal with constantly, what advice would you give them outside of centralizing?
I probably would say create some secret shoppers. And basically ask some individuals that you trust to request their information and see how long it takes, see what roadblocks they may be occurring, and see where you need to make revisions to that process.
And
I've done that in my past. So that's how I knew when I was still at an enterprise level of health information that we needed to centralize, because as I used in that example, you know, people think of an entity, if it says enterprise, it's an umbrella and it should cover that umbrella. And we were finding that it wasn't happening.
That's a very good point. Rita, anything else, any other advice you'd like to give our listeners?
I think the best thing to do is if you are an enterprise, you know, have that one source of truth that's in your facility that you go to. And if you are partnering with somebody, make sure you are partnering with someone that has that oversight that's connected to look at these rules and constantly provide education, because it's really hard to do on your own.
Well, Rita, thanks for joining the show today. And your insight is very, very helpful. This is a hard area for our listeners to comply with, because they are having to comply with certain restrictions and at the same time being more liberal in their providing of the information. So there is a sort of a tug of war going on between these rules and regulations, one constraining and one liberating. And we as consumers, we're all consumers of this. We're all going to have health information documents that we're going to want to have access to, and that information for various reasons. And so it's important to not only the general listeners that we have on here, but personally for us. And so it is an area that has a lot of attention right now, and especially from the OCR and so forth. So again, thank you for clarifying some of this and for being on the show today, Rita. I really do appreciate it. For more insight for our listeners on patients' medical records through the healthcare system, visit our show's page at mrocorp.com and be sure to explore additional resources and our thought leadership. Also, please check our program page on healthcarenowradio.com. And finally, be sure to connect with us on Twitter at MROCORP. Until we talk again, I'm Don Hardwick, your host. Good day.